How's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 3 of She and Titans, where we're going to take a look at the penultimate chapter of our Titans prereq, our Dawn of DC Titans prereq here in the pages of Nightwing. Before we get into the issue, I did want to say thank you again. I believe I started last episode with thank yous, and I would like to do so again. Received a lot of very, very kind words over the past couple days, and a very warm welcome back, which, honestly, I don't deserve and I didn't expect. So thank you all so much. I feel like I'm still in this sort of nebulous, you know, don't call it a comeback because I'm not sure I'm back sort of mindset. But definitely, thank you so much for the warm welcome and reception. It really, really means just so much to me. I can't say it enough. But rather than subject you all to several minutes of me gushing, we'll just jump ahead to the book we're going to discuss today, which is Nightwing number 103. But before we get into that, I've been kind of fixated on these covers. The covers for this run have been kind of unique, very new school, I would say. This is another one that I think the jaded, cynical Chris would be conflicted on, because it is very, very new school. But at the same time, it's not totally disassociated from the story within. And of course, we are talking about the real cover, because to me, there really is only one cover. I don't mess with the variant stuff, don't mess with the incentivized stuff. I'm not gonna, you know, run off and 9.6-ify this issue. I just want the story, and I like each story to have its own cover. Yada, 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 old man comic stuff. Anyway, let's get into the cover. It's a postcard rack, which features a bunch of, like, Bloodhaven, Bluthaven, Wish You Were Heres, right? We see a Nightwing-themed postcard and also a Titans-themed one, because the Titans are operating out of Bloodhaven, Bluthaven, Bluthaven, however we say that. And it's pretty cool. It says, like, Home of the Titans. It has the classic Titans logo, which, hey, I mean, if you're Titans lapsed like I was and still am, seeing that classic logo might cause this issue to do that whole, you know, jumping off the rack thing that we like to romanticize here on the show. Now, this issue of Nightwing, issue 103, was the first new issue of Nightwing that I bought in a very long time, which is to say that on the day I bought it, it was still on the, you know, this week's book wall. You know, I did buy, as I mentioned before, issues 100 through 103 all in one shot on the same day, but 100, 101, and 102 were all on the six-month wall, 103 was on the brand new wall. So this is the first new book I bought in a long time. And, you know, I would like to think that even if I didn't already know that Nightwing was the de facto Titans book for this arc, seeing that logo and seeing these characters might have caused me to buy it all on its own, but, I mean, I did know, so who could say? In any event, this was a fun, neat, and creative new school cover, so how about we crack the sucker open and see what's inside? This is, of course, Nightwing Volume 4, number 103. Had a June 2023 cover date. Story is called, because the story actually gets a credit in this issue. Last issue we didn't get a title, we didn't get any credits. But in seeing what we have here, we can deduce that the guesses we made last time were at least close to being right. The story is called Rise of the Underworld, Part 3 of 4, confirming that this is the penultimate chapter, written by Tom Taylor with art by Travis Moore and Vasco Georgiev. I don't know. Colors, Adriano Lucas. Letters, Wes Abbott. Edits, Barbie Chan and Abernathy. Cover price, $5. This one went on sale April the 18th of 2023. And, you know, it's funny. Not funny, but I didn't realize that there were two artists on this book because the art flows so well here. I would have never guessed there was more than one artist. And when I, you know, wrote up the credits and discovered that there were, even looking back, I mean, it was clear it was a different artist, but it was not obvious, if that makes any sense. These two really work well together. Anyway, our story. We open with Raven, who I probably don't need to remind you is the daughter of Trigon the Terrible, do I? Maybe? I don't know. Anyway, she is leading her fellow Titans, Beast Boy, Nightwing, and Cyborg, through a portal into Hell. Now, in a nice touch, she insists on placing a sort of a psychic blinding hex on her teammates in order to save them from having to see all the suffering that, you know, tends to go on down here. Now, seeing as though they're all heroes, their first impulse would probably be to try and help those suffering, but I mean, it's Hell, so it's just kind of what they do here. The Titans would be powerless to save or even help these poor sufferers, so best that they just can't see it. From here, we jump to elsewhere in the underworld, where Neron is meeting up with Blaze. And, you know, it's probably just due to my vintage as a comic fan, and when I discovered a lot of these characters, but it's always so weird when it's, like, just Blaze, and not Blaze and Satanas, like back in the early triangle numbering days of Superman. Very weird. It's like, it has to be Blaze Satanas, but it's not. Anyway, Blaze is here to mock and remind Neron, and I suppose any readers who are just now joining us, that our big bad can't seem to outwit a 9-year-old girl. Oh, and she also reveals that she just cut out an entire tongue from one of Neron's demonic underlings, so I guess there's that too. Now, Neron, he ain't fitting to hear none of this, so he slams her with a tomb sound effect, which knocks her the F out. He then announces that he's going to be heading topside for a bit. Speaking of topside, our next scene takes us to... that place that's as hard for me to say as it is for me to spell. Themyscira? Themyscira? I mean, for years, I would pronounce, like, Hippolyta instead of Hippolyta. You know, I'm wobble-mouthed at best. Maybe I should just call this Paradise Island. And I mean, that's even assuming that Themyscira is Paradise. I don't know. I'm not much of a Wonder Woman fan, so they might be two different places. I'll just give it my best shot. That's kind of all I can do. But where the hell were we? Oh, we're on that island I can't pronounce. Now, we're here in order for Olivia to get some fighting training. Donna, Corey, and Batgirl are here with her, which makes me wonder, is Babs a Titan now? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she'll loom large regardless as Oracle, but is Batgirl an official member of our team? I'm not sure. Maybe I ought to stop putting off reading those two or three Titans United miniseries that I bought over the past couple of years and just kind of filed away. Don't know. Anyway, I'm also not sure why they'd need to bring Olivia here instead of just training her back on the Dayton Estate. Assuming, of course, that the place that Beast Boy is hanging out is a Dayton Estate. You know, while I'm reading those Titans Uniteds, maybe I ought to actually read those Unstoppable Doom Patrol issues that I've been buying as well. Anyway, we're on Themyscira? Themyscira? We're there, and this'll pay off later, so we will allow it. First, let's head back to Hell. Now, the Titans happen across Blaze's prone bod just as she's starting to come to. And it's here that we get our official reminder that Raven is the daughter of Trigon the Terrible, just in case you're keeping track. Raven tells Blaze that they're here on a sort of fact-finding mission. And, you know, as established at the end of last issue, they're here to find Neron's demonic soul share filing cabinet. Blaze, who obviously isn't Neron's biggest fan at the moment, is quick to cooperate and leads our heroes to the Big Bad's pointy, spiky, chainy-looking tower. She reveals that Neron's, quote, record-keeping computer, unquote, is located on the top floor of the place. Which almost seems like she's leading them into a trap, doesn't it? Well, not really. She's actually being completely straight up with them, so no worries there. Though you might be also thinking that Neron keeping all of his soul stuff on a computer sounds perhaps a little too cute by half, which, admittedly, it kind of does, right? A little bit? Well, we'll read on anyway, because this might actually lead to a chuckle or two. Like, for real. No joke. We'll get there, I promise. First, though, well, we gotta get our good guys into the tower, right? So Nightwing asks Beast Boy to transform into the shape of a demon, which, it's been a minute, but if I'm remembering right, was something that Gar was able to do during the rough, to the point where even to this very day I haven't been able to force myself through it all, the Bill Jaska era on New Titans? Again, if I'm remembering right, Beast Boy was able to, or maybe he had no choice but to, transform into like these nightmarish Lovecraftian horrors. Anyway, if that's a callback, I dig it. If Gar can just change into whatever he wants, hey, we'll take that as well, whatever the case, right? Anyway, Gar does transform, and the fellas make it appear as though he, you know, is in fact a demon, and he caught Dick and Vic, and he's taken them captive, looking to deliver them to Neron himself. Only, we already know that the big bad's gone topside for a bit, so our heroes decide to drop the ruse and just blast, beat, and fight their way on inside. Once at the top floor, Vic is taken aback by Neron's tech setup. And like I said, this is actually kinda cute and funny here, and something that the inner cynic in me is almost embarrassed that I smirked at. It's a bank of these, like, late 80s, early 90s looking PCs. And Cyborg takes a seat at one of them and begins to interface when he is shocked by what he sees. Now, what he sees is that Neron has, like, dozens, if not hundreds, of icons on his Windows Hell.0 desktop. It's very funny. I'm doing it a great disservice, I'm sure, in trying to describe it. So, Vic, he jacks in, and he's almost overwhelmed by all the malware, spyware, bloatware, pop-up ads, update notifications, you know, all that, you know, yada yada stuff that we would have to deal with back in the long ago. Though, I mean, some people probably still do have that on their computers as we speak. Now, it's really a scene that you should actually see rather than have some idiot describe to you, because, I mean, it's like at least 10 times funnier than I'm making it sound here. Now, to top things off, Cyborg tells Dick and Gar not to give him any of their personal information for the time being. It's actually funny. He says, if I randomly ask you for your date of birth or your first pet's name after this, do not give me the information. And I'll admit, I laughed, I'm not even mad about it. It's a funny little bit. Anyway, it doesn't take long for Vic to find the information the fellas are looking for. And so, next we see them, they're in Neron's Hall of Contracts, or Hall of Records, or Hall of whatever, and they are able to locate the Desmond deal. Now, we find out that it's only been signed by Blockbuster, which means that both of Olivia's parents, or guardians, didn't approve the deal. Unfortunately, it's here that Dick discovers who Olivia's mother is, or make that was. It was a former bat love interest from the Morrison days, Jezebel Jett, who is at present both dead and without a head. Decapitated, you see. You see, Talia cut her head off, or at least revealed that she'd cut her head off, back in Batman number 681, December 2008 cover date, so pre-Flashpoint, huh? Which is still in continuity, one would imagine, since they're mentioning it here? I don't know, maybe. Anyway, now if Jezebel were still alive, a claim could be made that the Desmond deal was invalid, since Olivia is a child, and both of her parents didn't sign off on it. A moot point, perhaps, since Jezebel's dead and has been for quite some time, at least three continuities ago. But Dick ain't deterred. He has a plan. A bureaucratic plan. But first, let's head back topside. Our first stop's going to be Iron Heights Prison, where the Flash is making sure that the Grinning Man, remember him, is still safely tucked away in his cell. Which, at this very moment, he is. But not for long. You see, he's being visited by our friend Neron. Now, he also is somehow aware that Olivia's been taken to Themyscira, that place. I'm not sure why the Titans would fill him in on that. Maybe he just overheard them chatting about what they're going to do later on that day during the car ride over to Iron Heights. I don't know. In any event, Neron is he's a bit trepidatious. He's not so sure about the wisdom in stepping to the Amazons. He's kind of worried about the optics of such a move, but he does have a plan. So how about we get back to that island where the Amazons live and see it play out? And by get back to, I actually mean jump one day later and rejoin the ladies here. And we rejoin them as Olivia's training session rolls on. Now, the sesh is interrupted by the arrival of Wonder Woman, who asks the Tot to give her her best shot. Now, after summoning all of her might, Olivia throws a stiff right punch right into Diana's waiting palm. She catches it with ease, right? Wonder Woman then, she returns fire, so to speak, by kicking the ever-loving bejesus out of the kid, like, off-panel, right? And this gets us our second Toom sound effect of the issue, which I guess they really like that one. The ladies start to freak out, obviously, right? Not understanding why Diana would, you know, nearly kill a child. The new DC, y'all, ain't no stopping us now. No, I'm kidding, of course. This isn't actually Wonder Woman. Our heroes then find themselves overwhelmed by psychic and magnetic energy attacks. And it's here where it's revealed that Wonder Woman is actually our new pal, the Grinning Man. And he's been joined in this battle by Dr. Polaris and Gorilla Friggin' Grodd. Huh. Remember when either of those two latter names could be seen as a major threat all on their own? Yeah, me neither. We shift scenes. This time we're going back to Bloodhaven, Bloodhaven's town hall, where Nightwing is filling out some paperwork. He gets a call from Oracle to fill him in on what's going down on Themyscira. And hey, wait a sec. Is Oracle not Batgirl? Because Batgirl's in the middle of a fight, right? And she should be under psychic attack. Maybe she was able to pull herself away to make the call, maybe it ain't even Oracle, but it's got her stylized word balloon. At least I think it's her stylized word. Hold on a second. Okay. It looks like Oracle is Batgirl. The word balloon says that they are under attack and they need Olivia taken to safety. So I will mea culpa there. Chalk it up to poor reading comprehension. I gotta say, I know that I am a very dense dude, but I actually got a little worried there for a bit. And with, DC and I guess all mainstream comics continuity being such a scattershot disaster nowadays, it honestly wouldn't have surprised me if, like, we just learned that it was the Barbara Gordon of Earth 712 that's actually Oracle and not Bear. Which, I guess that's kind of a problem for the lapsed reader, isn't it? Or at least this lapsed reader, the fact that my mind immediately goes on the defensive when confronted with information that doesn't like immediately and automatically jive with the canon that I'm familiar with. And it's weird. I mean, the fact that I was just so quick to accept that we've probably got like a half dozen Babses running around the DCU at any given time. I don't know. Is that a problem with me or with comics or both or neither? I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. Dick sends Gar, Raven, and Vic boom-tubing away to help the rest of the Titans while he finishes up his urgent clerical work. Now, no sooner do his pals leave than Neron makes his presence known. Now, it turns out, of course, that this Neron fella really, really wants Olivia's soul. And, you know, I don't want to be a literal devil's advocate or be that guy, but, he kind of already made a deal for it, didn't he? I mean, I'm no hell lawyer, and I'm certainly not advocating for the eternal damnation of a young child's soul, but a contract's a contract, right? has Neron actually done anything wrong here? Do we need, like, Reed Richards to come in and testify on his behalf in court? I don't know. Anyway, it's here that Dick reveals what he's been working on. And, you see, he just filled out all the proper forms in order to become Olivia Desmond's legal guardian. Which means, well, which somehow means that his signature is now required in order to seal the deal on the soul swap. And I mean, I'm not sure social services ever works that quickly, do they? I mean, it hasn't even been a business day yet, much less the 10 to 14 most government agencies give themselves to do the tiniest of tasks. But, I mean, we are talking about soul exchanges and Lords of the Underworld, and even though this is the most unbelievable element of the story thus far, we have no choice but to allow it. Neron takes a gander at these forms and is like, come on, dude, what are you doing? He then makes Dick an offer that he doesn't think he'll be able to refuse. He appeals to our man's mortality, and how, when compared to his titanic pals and his non-bat peers in the superhero community, well, he ain't got diddly squat. He's got no actual superpowers. I mean, the grinning man found that out and thought it was sad hilarious, right? So Dick's got no powers. Well, not yet, anyway. Neron says if Dick decides to play ball and signs on that dotted line, he will grant him the powers of a Kryptonian. And so we close out the ish with our hero getting, well, just a taste of that. The visual we get here is Nightwing in semi-Kryptonian-looking duds, and he is just bursting with power. It's a heck of a visual, and that is where we leave it for today. Had a really good time with this issue. How about I try and talk about it? Now, putting into words what I think about anything is challenging for me, but I will do my best. I mean, first of all, 3 issues in a row. I would have never bet a single dime on that here. I mean, we've only got 1 chapter left of this story, and it's still one that I would highly recommend. Not that my recommendation actually means anything. It hardly means anything to me, much less anybody else. But definitely a fun story. So how's about I do that, that bit where I nebulously tried to discuss the issue. It's weird. Sometimes when you do this, or when you stop doing this, or when you start doing this again, as far as, you know, I hate the term content creation, but I mean, it's really, it's the best descriptor of what it is that I do, because I'm not actually doing anything creative. Now, the more I get back into this, you know, content creation gimmick, you know, which is to say writing and chatting about comics and whatnot, the more I'm able to begin to identify my many, many weaknesses in doing so. Among them, and perhaps chief among them, is my propensity toward becoming hyper-focused on certain things in fiction or certain things in whatever subject I'm looking at that are mostly, like, self-defined and, at best, wildly subjective. Case in point, this very arc, right, and my inability to put into words why I feel that it has that ever nebulous and nigh on indefinable quality of heart. You know, if you listen to last episode, you'll know that I wrestled with what it means for a Titan story to feel like a real Titan story. Because this, to me, definitely does. And I think I settled on the non-answer, cop-out answer of, it's just something you know when you see it. Highly subjective, not a metric at all, but it's just a you-know-it-when-you-see-it sort of a thing. And today, I still find myself fixated on trying to define this. To my mind, the biggest compliment and the highest recommendation I can personally give something is by citing these very, very nebulous things, by citing how much heart and passion and, dare I say, even love has clearly gone into a project. We've talked about this before as it relates to things as silly as podcasting. You know, the only Chris commandment about podcasting is that you care about what it is you're talking about. you don't need to have encyclopedic knowledge of your topic. I mean, take it from me. You don't need that. But damn it, be passionate about it. You're taking up people's time. You know, be passionate about what you're talking about. Be passionate about what you're creating. It's a metric based purely on projection. My own projection, which is at best a very, very, very flawed way at looking at just about anything. But it's kind of what I do, right? And I mean, I could go on chasing my tail and wasting your time for the next several minutes, hours, days, weeks, trying to define this quality, but for all of our sakes, I'll just move on. And you see, I said all of that, or tried saying all of that, so that I might say this. The story we're looking at to this point 100% has heart. Am I over-romanticizing it? Maybe, probably. Am I just really, really hungry for a classic feeling Titan story? Most definitely. But I think to say that would be selling this story short. It's more than that. It really is a good story. It's not just for the, for the hungry Titans fans like me. The fact remains, to me anyway, that this story is the most Titans thing that I've read in what feels like forever. Like I said last time, or the time before, I can't remember, the Titans feel like a family in this story, or at the very least, friends who care about one another. The fact also remains that over the past however many years, I've personally found it a lot easier to be negative and talk or write about what I don't like about something, which might just be why I'm having so much trouble putting into words exactly what it is about this story that works so well for me. And boy, I'm rambling again, aren't I? Let's shove ahead here. Let's shove ahead and talk more about the issue itself. Though, of course, if you have any thoughts on this nebulous metric, or can put it into words better than I can, which at this point is not exactly that high a bar to clear, I invite you to reach out and let me know your thoughts. Your thoughts are always welcome and always appreciated and encouraged. So any thoughts you have, send them my way. Let's talk about the damn issue, right? Is it perfect? Despite my gushing here, no, of course it's not perfect. And also, despite whatever any 10 out of 10 shill factory might tell you, nothing is perfect. Now, pitting the Titans against Gorilla Grodd and Dr. Polaris felt kinda out of nowhere. Like, almost as though they just flipped through like a Who's Who omnibus and picked a couple of random pages. Not quite as weird as like the Steve Orlando Marvel Wiki randomizer that we repeatedly ran into over on X-Lapsed, but still kind of weird. Unless, of course, maybe there are some obvious context clues that I'm missing. You know, I am very much DC-lapsed and really don't know which way is up just yet, so maybe it's obvious and I just don't know. It's really nothing worth getting mad about or holding against the story. It just kind of felt like an afterthought. And certainly like a leveling down of some potential big bads for what feels like is just going to be some throwaway fight scene to facilitate action. It reminds me a bit, and this is, I don't know if this is a deep cut or not, but it reminds me a bit of a scene from the One Year Later Superman story, Up, Up, and Away. I think that was Geoff Johns and Kurt Busiek back, 2006, 2007? In the scene, Superman enters into battle with, it's like his entire post-crisis, pre-Infinite Crisis rogues gallery. It's like Silver Banshee, the one with the guns, Team Titan guy. Who was that guy? Blood something? The guy with the guns. It was a bunch of, Burn-era post-crisis villains here. And these were bad guys that had been able to hold their own against Superman individually in the past. And in this scene, he beats them over the course of a single page. Definite leveling down of these characters at play. And of course, I'm not suggesting that there's anything nefarious about it or a commentary being made. It's just, in my opinion, not a terribly good look. Another sorta, kinda quibble has to do with Dick becoming Olivia's legal guardian just like that. And I mean, I brushed up against it during the synopsis. We're in a story full of hell computers, demons, and shape-shifting smilers, and this is the most unrealistic thing about it. This is my bridge too far. It just felt super rushed, super convenient. I don't want to go so far as to say it feels like anything was truncated or we ran out of pages so we got to do this. It just felt kind of rushed. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure it took every bit of 2 weeks for me to get the okay to replace my natural grass in the front yard with artificial turf, you know? And somehow Nightwing's able to take custody of an orphan child of a supervillain without even having to wait until the next business day. At the end of the day, what do I know? I ain't no lawyer, and I certainly haven't read the Bloodhaven, Bloodhaven Social Services Handbook, so maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Minor quibbles, and those, even if we can call them that aside, there's still a ton to dig about this issue. The lady's taking Olivia to Themyscira, that place for training was pretty cool, ultimately made story sense, and for me personally, it kind of checked off a box. One of the questions being bandied about in the comments section over at Chris's on Infinite Earths is whether the first two chapters of this arc were featuring the Titans as an official unit, an official team, or if it was just, you know, the old friends getting together and hanging out again. And I feel like that was a fair question, and up to this point, something certainly worth pondering. I think with this scene, though, I'm not sure what it was about it. The Olivia training scene, to me, it made things clear that the Titans are currently a team. Like, this is official. It told me that this was more than just a one-off reunion, or old home week, or, you know, get together, play the hits, and then split up again. This scene made the whole arrangement feel more real and permanent. As permanent as anything in current year comics can be. So I think this was a very good scene and a very welcome scene. Let's talk about the Hell Heist, which I really, really enjoyed. It was a very, you know, it wasn't the LOL random sort of humor that I'm used to in, you know, contemporary comics. It was actually funny. Surprisingly funny. Vic's quips about his own, you know, potentially compromised security settings after interfacing with the ancient malware-filled PC, I found that funny. It actually managed to inspire a sensible chuckle or two out of this jaded comic cynic, which almost never happens. So a very surprising and welcome sensation to smile, smirk, and giggle about a scene in a comic book. Because not only was it funny, but it felt genuine. You know, it felt like these characters that we've known and loved for so long, it felt like them being themselves. And, I mean, I can't say enough about that. To the ending here, Dick was offered the powers of Kryptonian, which is a pretty neat twist and cliffhanger. Though, of course, I mean, it's Nightwing. He ain't gonna sell his soul, nor Olivia's, for power. We know that already, but I mean, the fact that he was given these powers for however long he's going to have them, you know, the temporary taste that he has here, I think that opens us up to potentially interesting story beats, right? Like, I don't think this will be permanent. Of course it won't be permanent, but will he get the opportunity to, you know, flex his superpowers for a bit? Will he get the opportunity to really try these powers on and see what he can do and see the potential of how much good he can do for the world? I think that's going to be, I mean, it's not in any kind of doubt, but it could offer up some very interesting scenes and at least the tiniest possibility of, you know, what if. And that's cool. Speaking of cool, the temporary costume we see him in here on the last panel is also pretty cool, which serves to segue us briefly into the art for the issue here. You guys know, if you've listened to my stuff or read my stuff, I always get a bit squirrely when it comes to talking about art because, I mean, I'm not an artist. I really don't feel comfortable judging it, but I will say that I liked it, and I'll repeat what I said earlier, where we have two artists on this issue, and I didn't even realize it until after the fact. So, Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I'm just an idiot. Who knows? But I think I've said all I can say about this issue, and then some. So this is where I will leave it for today. I would like to thank you all so much for choosing to spend some of your day with me today. And fingers crossed, I'll be talking to you again real soon. See ya. To me.